Questions. Here we go. When is it okay to go to war? And this question kind of is another question that I kind of created because I don't think anybody is planning on going to war. But can you get into a fight at school and it be for the right reasons or okay? And so the war question is for us as a country, but none of us are making war decisions. However, each one of us could personally get into war. And so that's a good way for us to frame it. Now, the Bible has a lot of times where people go to war. And so when we answer the question of when is it okay to war, we're not just going to point to stories because stories are situational in nature. So we're not going to say, everybody open up to the story of the Battle of Jericho. Here's when it's okay to go to war, because that story was very specific. But there are principles that we apply. Ecclesiastes 3:1-8, the first verse says, "For everything that there's a season, an appointed period of time, and a time for every matter under heaven." So there's certain times. There's a bunch of different things that Solomon goes through. But verse 8 says that there's a time for war and a time for peace. Some of you have watched a movie called A Time to Kill. That's also found in Ecclesiastes 3. Samuel L. Jackson loved the Bible. Matthew 26:51-52 says, "Behold, one of these who were with Jesus," this is Peter, "stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. Then Jesus said to him," and this is a principle of war, "put your sword back into its place, for all who take the sword will perish by the sword." So if you try to go Leonardo on somebody, somebody's going to try to go Leonardo on you. Principle. Matthew 5:38-48 says this, "You have heard that it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. But if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone would sue you and take up your tunic, let him also have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. You have heard that it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who's in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? You therefore must be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect." Now there are two responses from those passages and how Christians respond to war. The first is known as Christian pacifism. The second is known as the just war theory, and we're going to go through both. Christian pacifism simply is this. It was developed by the Quakers. If you don't know who they were, they built a lot of oats. The second is that the kingdom of God is not of the world. And so that was a principle of it, that God isn't too concerned about how he's ruling on the planet. The third is that if you live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword. The fourth is that Jesus and his disciples did not avoid persecution, and many died by the hands of their persecutors. And so he says, if you look at Jesus, he died on a cross. He could have killed all of his enemies. All of his disciples could have avoided all of their enemies. They, in fact, did not do that, but they died. Really terrible death is. I'm trying to make up for lost time here. The fifth is that popular passages that support that, and there's no need for us to go through this. We put all of those at the bottom of your handout. Popular passages that support this are those passages. So if you want to read that, look at the bottom at the verses. And then some of the criticism of Christian pacifism is that in many cases, those who are holding to it are doing so under the umbrella of those who have fought, died, and earned their freedom to do so. Now, I want you to understand that content, because there are a lot of American Christians who hold to Christian pacifism. But the only reason they can hold to Christian pacifism is because many Americans died to give them the freedom to hold to Christian pacifism. So if it wasn't for the death of people who thought it valid to go to war, they themselves would not be able to say it's okay for us not to go to war. And so just to get that idea. The next is the just war theory. This has been around for millennia. All right? And the just war theory gives two things: the right to go to war and the right conduct when you're in the war. And so the criteria that that establishes is this, which I know that this is a lot for your brain. Feel it explode. The just war theory dates all the way back into the times of the Roman conquest. In ancient Rome, a just cause for war might include the necessity of repelling an invasion or retaliation from pillaging or a breach of a treaty. So three things. That it might repel an invasion, retaliate against those who are pillaging, like the Vikings, or a breach of a treaty. You're a liar, we're going to war. War was always potentially wrong and forbidden and risked religious pollution and divine disfavor. A just war thus required a ritualized declaration by the fetal priest. So religious people had to say, it's now okay. More broadly, conventions of war and treaty making were part of the law of nations, the customary moral obligations regarded as innate and universal to human beings. And so what it said is, every human has general things that are applied to every person on the planet. And as nations, we're going to generally treat every nation this way. And so if that's true, then they say, we recognize that there needs to be somebody judging. Is it okay? Is it not okay? And so once priests declare it's okay, then they go. So there's some principles to a just war. The first was that the war must occur for a good and just purpose rather than self-gain. For example, in the nation's interests, is an unjust war, or it's an exercise of power. So the first thing would have to be that there is a good and just purpose why we're going to war, not simply so that we would get more land, get more power, get more stuff, or to say we're stronger than you are. So that's number one. The second was that the just war must be waged by a properly instituted authority, such as the state. So when somebody in Texas feels like they should go to war because they don't want to be America anymore, they want to be their own nation, that's not just because a state's not doing that. It's a couple dudes running around in the woods playing army who are doing that, all right? So that's not a just war. The third would be that peace must be a central motive, even in the midst of the violence. And so even to say, we're going to be violent in order to establish peace, not just to be violent. Four, in self-defense, as long as there's a reasonable possibility of success, if failure is foregone conclusion, then it is just a wasteful spilling of blood. And so in defending yourself, if you say, we have a reasonable chance to win here, then let's go for it. If everyone knows you're going to get annihilated, you're simply wasting blood because everyone knows you're going to get annihilated. The fifth part of it would be preventative war against a tyrant who's about to attack. That would be in the case of, say, Hitler. The sixth would be war to punish a guilty enemy. Hitler. The seventh is that it's necessary that the response be commensurate to the evil. Use of more violence then is strictly necessary would constitute an unjust war. And so if we say they've shot bullets at us, we're going to drop an atomic bomb. That's not okay. That's measuring it way too unskilled. Oh, you shot bullets? How do you like that? That's not just. The governing authorities declare war, but their decision is not sufficient because to begin a war, if the people oppose a war, then it's illegitimate. The people have the right to depose a government that is waging or is about to wage an unjust war. So if the United States says we're going to war and everybody in America is like, uh-uh, that as Americans, we have the right to say we're not going to submit to that government because they're not waging a just war. And this was the way they worded it. The ninth, and this is the last two, that once war has begun, there remain moral limits to action. For example, one may not attack innocents or kill hostages. And so to say, if women and children are around, they're not violent aggressors. And so as a conquering army, it's not just to go in and say, you were with him? Ta-ta-ta, that's not okay. Well, of course, we don't use swords anymore. All right, then the last one is that it's obligatory, meaning mandatory, to take advantage of all opinions for dialogue and negotiations before undertaking a war. War is only legitimate as a last resort. And so to say, if it's possible to talk, you talk. If talking has exhausted itself, then that means that it's exhausted itself and you are no longer talking. So our response then is these two things. War is one of the greatest evils on the planet. And there's not a single person in the entire world who does not agree. War and the death of wars by nations fighting against nations is one of the worst evils our planet knows. Where this evil exists and where evil exists, there's always going to be war. The Bible even says that there's going to be consistent wars until the end of times. Evil people exist. Evil people get into power. Evil people fight evil people. Good people fight evil people. There's going to be war, and war will always be a great evil because of the people who die in it. And then two, Christian pacifism and just wars are two examples of how to judge each war situationally. There's not a way for us to blanket statement and say, yes, war, yes, war, yes, war, no war, no war, no war. It's possible for us to say situationally, there are times and there are seasons where war is appropriate, and there are times and there are seasons where peace is appropriate. That's Ecclesiastes 3. So, with that being said, that is a lot. If you have questions, feel free to submit them to our panel. You can type just ask and your message to 27138. But I'm going to throw it to this crew and let them contribute. I'll say none of them are soldiers. We're all simply sharing opinion here. And so we'll throw, and I don't know if anybody's feeling it. Alan, you're the most pastoral. Why don't you jump on that one? It's good now.
Hello. All right. Like you said, I'm not a soldier. And so anywhere you look in any culture, there's always, no matter what religion or what background they come from, socially, economically, there's always an example of war and there's always evil that resides behind it in some sort. There's never like a 100% good war, like everything that happens out of it is good. People are hurt and people die and there's pain and suffering. Like you said, war is one of the most evil things that we have on the planet, and it's just a result of sin and the fallen nature of men fighting against men. And so that's my opinion on it.
Amy or Jake? Ladies, he's deferred to the lady first. Uh-huh. Sweet gentleman.
This is my personal opinion, obviously, but I personally subscribe to the just war theory. It's fairly based on scripture, actually. And war is never a good thing, as obviously we've already discussed. But sometimes you just have to like, kind of like kick the bad guy, you know? Of like, I don't really know how to say that in a really eloquent way. Like, don't ever write
that. Kick
the
bad guy was pretty good,
you
I
know?
Think.
Yeah. Like, never write that on a paper. But but sometimes, you know, there's just someone who is just evil and they need to be handled. And so it's kind of my opinion. But I also think that there are wars that have been fought throughout history that shouldn't have been fought. And so the just war theory is kind of a good way to look back on that and say, you know what, this one probably wasn't right. Or look at a different one, like, yeah, that one.
Okay, well, we got a question, so I'm going to throw it your way because you're already kind of going there. We had a question that says, is the war in Iraq legitimate? So that is kind of a situational one that, I mean, obviously you're going to be sharing your opinion. But then even if, based on that answer, share the opposite opinion there. How about that? So give an example of a just war, that, in your opinion, and an unjust war.
Unjust war, an easy one would be the Crusades.
Okay.
Like, back in the day, like, Christians and Catholics just killing people because they're not Christians or Catholic. Like, that's just stupid. So that's pretty easy unjust war. Just war. I don't really know if there's, like, a completely whole war start to end that's completely just. That's kind of a hard one.
Would you put the American War for Independence in that category?
Kind of.
Maybe?
Like, for the most part, yeah.
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 Are you clapping for America? Oh.
Yeah.
World War II.
Yeah.
World War II. I'm going to go with that one. Was just.
What's that?
I'm going to say World War II is just.
World War II. Okay, that's a good example. World War II, just. Crusades, unjust. I think even as the Crusades continued and you see children going to war, that's probably not the just way to carry it out. Right? Okay, there you go. Dr. Jake? Is it on? Did I mute you? You might have been muted. Tanner, is it on? Flick it. There it is. Dr. Jake in the house.
Yeah, I like the second point that you make here about that Christian pacifism, just war, these are two examples how to judge each war situationally. And a lot of wars, when you're getting into it, you know, the intent of going into that war may not be bad intent. It may be a just cause going into it. I mean, certainly whenever America went to war with Saddam Hussein over in Iraq, I mean, this was fresh out after 9/11. Probably 90% of the country at that time agreed with going to war. And then when you look in the lens of history and you begin to look back on it and you start to kind of, you know, pick out the details of certain wars, then a lot of times what seemed like it was a just war when you got in may turn out that, I'm not sure if that was really just or not. Even the Crusades, I mean, there were numerous Crusades that occurred. The first of the Crusades, there was actually a lot of people that were very fervent for things of God. I mean, there were people that they wanted to find holy relics, and so their thought was they need to go and kind of, you know, storm these other lands and try to acquire all these holy relics to bring them back into their empire, okay? And they went out, and there was a lot of killing and a lot of terrible stuff that happened kind of in the name of these things, the name of these holy things that they felt passionate about. And they felt called to do that. They had kind of the approval of the priest at that time, of the Pope. And then looking back, it seems like every subsequent crusade got worse and worse and worse. But then when we look back on the whole thing, we think about it in the lens as Christians and the lens of people that are supposed to be loving other people and helping them come into relationship with God, you know, it seems like none of them were good, you know? And so I think that situationally, we do need to look at each particular situation, potential war, or even as we look back on wars, a lot of them are going to be tough to judge and to be right on. I do think the American Revolution, when you think back about that, I mean, it's hard not to be on board with that. I think about these movies that I get passionate about. I think about Braveheart, and you see William Wallace, you know, kind of leading these Scottish men towards their freedom. And then you kind of watch The Patriot, you know, and like you see these different movies, and it gets you all stirred up, because the part that stirs us up is the passion for good, the passion for freedom, or setting captives free, or getting something back that we hold dear. And so those, whenever you're really going for those and everything else has failed and it comes to last result in war, I mean, if you're going at it with just or with good purposes, then there probably is a time and a place. But it's hard. You have to be very cautious and prayerful on the front end to make sure you're not getting into something that's unjust, as much as you can tell.
I think this will go to everybody, and you can feel free to respond how you'd like. But one of the questions we got is, war, what is it good for?
Absolutely nothing.
Good God, y'all. War, huh, yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Okay. So everybody's now doing a Jackie Chan impression or a Chris Rock impression. Thank you very much. All right. Chris Tucker, my bad. Thanks, Andrew. All right, now, here's another question, and then we'll move on to the next. Does this mean we should not join the military? If someone's saying yay, nay, ladies first.
Yeah, I have a kind of a strong opinion on this one, but I'll try to keep it short.
Okay.
A lot of people's patriotism stops at their words. And so a lot of people go, oh, I love America, yay, America. And then, hey, will you defend her? Nope. Kind of a lame answer. I know after college, I almost joined the Navy just because it's like, oh, I love my country, you know? But I think there are people definitely called to the military because the Lord needs Christians there too. And I think that's a really important thing to remember, but it's also kind of a cop-out for people who say they're really patriots and then anti-military. Just seems kind of backwards to me.
Right. One of our leaders, John Cron, did join the military, and so that's something.
I'll just chime in too and say that, I mean, I have the utmost respect for men and women in uniform. I've worked at a VA for quite a bit of time during my training, and one of the inscriptions when you walk into a VA, I think it's probably nationwide, is the price of freedom lives here. And you see people walking in with missing limbs, missing eyes, you know, hearing loss because the cannons were booming next to their ears, you know, time after time. You meet these people and talk to them about their story. And, I mean, the things they tell you are just amazing. And when you listen to that, and then you then intermingle that with the fact that we live in a free country because of the sacrifice paid by these people on our behalf to try to preserve what we feel is good and right in this country, it really makes you just appreciate them so much more. One other quick story. There's a patient of mine that I've done surgery on him twice. He's a little boy. He's like 3 or 4 years old. right now his mom is home with him and his two siblings, and they've been without dad for like probably about 10 months now because he's been over in Afghanistan. And I was asking her, you know, what's your husband doing in Afghanistan? And she said that he's working as a medic at a medical facility to care for the prisoners over in Afghanistan that they have in their facility. And I just thought, that's amazing that we, as a country, even when we go to war, we try to still do it in as civil of a manner as possible. We try to care for their, you know, their people, even their soldiers, and care for our enemy that we have in our captivity. And, you know, I just sit there and think about their family and the sacrifice they've been through without dad at home, even when their son's getting multiple operations. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And that man's really putting in a big sacrifice, and he's doing it to go and care for the enemies that we're in war against.
And the opportunity for you to agree or disagree with war is based on what's been fought for. And so I think even when you see submission to authority, every military person you know has sworn to defend the United States of America from enemies both foreign and domestic, and they've agreed to do so based upon the orders of the government. And so those who serve in the military aren't getting a choice. They're simply doing their job. And so I think anytime, as a son of an Army man, anytime you get an opportunity to thank somebody who's served in the military or is serving in the military, it's a good opportunity for you to do so. And I think it's a good way for you to honor people after the honor has stopped happening. And that's I would just recommend that every opportunity you get. If you see someone who's uniformed or is wearing one of the military hats that says they've served, just say thank you for your service. And that's just a good habit for you to get into. All right, and then someone said, why do we fight? It's very stupid. We're supposed to love, not fight. It's a good summary. That if you don't have to fight, don't fight, because fighting is stupid.